on the Fight Nerd Radio.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Danny the Upgrade Loventhal, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Martin Cannon. You're watching the FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
You see it? What is it?
The game we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York, you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is August 19th, 2009, and we are in the aftermath of Strikeforce's Kurano vs. Cyborg show. We're going to talk about that fighting show, plus some other news from this week. Coming up later on in the show, we're going to talk with James Urgot, who is the writer and director of the new MMA Worldwide TV show. He's going to have lots of fun stories to tell us about the making of that show, so stick around and listen to that. Before we dive too deep into some mixed martial arts stuff this week, I just want to take this time to thank my sponsors, a.k.a. the usual suspects. Without them, I could not buy my Easy Mac that I eat for dinner every night, and they are CageSideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. Also want to mention that this week, my iMac, which is the computer I usually do all my work with, including all the video stuff and all the general site updates, is still out for repairs, meaning I am doing this podcast today from the Millennium Falcon, a.k.a. my clunker of a PC. What's been going on is I had to get a new hard drive for my Mac, and I went to the Mac store to get this taken care of after making my appointment, which, by the way, I didn't know I had to do. Total pain in the ass. So I made my appointment. 3 days later, I finally got to see the prestigious Mac people, and they told me it would cost a lot of money and take about 2 to 3 weeks to get it fixed up. So they sent me somewhere else. So I went somewhere else, which would be a store called CompuMac, located in Wontaug, New York. And they told me that they needed to replace the hard drive as well. And it would cost me half the price, luckily, and hopefully half the time. So I thought I would have had the computer back, in fact, this week. Unfortunately, last Friday, they gave me a call saying that my hard drive was replaced, but they had to replace the optical sensor in it as well, which meant I'd have to wait another week to get my Mac back. So, until I do get it back, I'm stuck on the Millennium Falcon over here, but once I get the containment unit back, the site will be styling and profiling in no time. And we're working on some changes on the site for sure, not just on look, but in content, so you're not going to want to miss out what's happening with thefightnerd.com coming up very soon. Alright, on to the hot topic of this week. Strikeforce went down this weekend in San Jose, California, and history was made as Strikeforce crowned their very first 145-pound women's champion. And what was also the first sanctioned women's match with 5 5-minute rounds, Chris Cyborg only needed one of those rounds and pounded away at Gina Carano, forcing referee Josh Rosendahl to step in and end the fight with just 1 second left in that round. Now, the debate that's been going on now is, should the ref have stopped it that close to the end of the round or just let it go on? When I was watching the fight, I was actually wondering myself if Gina would in fact be saved by the bell or if the ref was going to step in despite there being such little time left in the round and stop the fight. Now, let's take a look at the beginning of the 5-minute round and the absolute pure aggression that Cyborg just poured on Gina. It was pretty obvious from the start that Gina had never been hit that hard in her entire life, and instead of countering, she began cowering, instead turning her face away from the blows, just blindly clinching when applicable, and that didn't really work too well for her, as you could see. According to Randy Couture, the game plan was for her to hit and run, and most likely just kind of tire out Cyborg since she was expending a ton of energy looking to finish that fight fast, which obviously she did. And that's really the problem with these rope-a-dope strategies sometimes, is that sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. In this case, Gina didn't move around enough and was just overwhelmed from the start of the fight, and once you start getting punched in the face, your game plan kind of starts to fly out the window. Even when Gina had a chance to capitalize, such as when Cyborg attempted those really odd suplex-looking takedowns that ended up with Chris being on her back and Gina mounted, Gina was still unable to do anything. Despite getting that position, Cyborg just pushed her off and went right back to smashing her face on her feet. So did the ref do the right thing, stopping the fight so close to the end? I say yes. Gina was not defending any of the strikes once she was on the mat, and I was surprised that Josh didn't end it sooner, in fact. Gina just ate those fists and curled up into a fetal position, and that was it. If you see the ref cam, you can see she's clearly in a lot of pain and definitely out of it. Not knocked out of it, mind you, but on the way to some serious pain and most likely looking into a second round knockout anyway. So with Cyborg and Strikeforce title in hand, can Scott Coker continue to market a women's division around a fighter and not just a pretty face? Coker claims to think so, but I call shenanigans. This is going to be a very big hump to get over for Strikeforce, since with Gina's undefeated streak destroyed, she's going to have to work her way back up to the top of the ladder. Is Gina Carano still marketable? Of course, that has not changed. She still has mainstream appeal and is still a household name. Not winning a title isn't going to change that. But with Cyborg the champion, the women's title is now going to be a lot harder of a sell for mainstream fans. Strikeforce, to me, is very much a hardcore fans company at this point still. They have a pretty shallow talent pool, and the fighters they have with name power are known more so among the hardcore fans, either former fighters from Pride or UFC fighters that Zuffa dropped, such as Diaz, Sobral, and Verdum. Now, don't get me wrong, I like that there's still competition for the UFC. There's still Bellator, hopefully. We'll find out if they're going to be running some shows again soon. And there was Affliction, but they're gone now, of course. So there's really not too much competition left out there. And I'm happy to see Strikeforce still pushing along. And I think they've been going about it the right way so far, building up a smaller company. But I just think right now it's going to be a serious test for Scott Coker and his organization, and now they really are the last direct competition, so we're going to see where this goes. I hope they can keep going. I hope they survive past another year or two, but you know, we're going to see right now it's pretty much Strikeforce versus UFC. Something else that's been bugging me for the past few weeks related to the Chrono and Cyborg fight, well, more than that, actually, it's been a little longer than that for sure, is how a lot of news sites have been reporting this fight as Beauty versus the Beast. This is just plain bad reporting, and not quite on the level of Chemo's death bad, but pretty bad. And that's really just rude to say and showing a terrible double standard in the misogynistic world of sports journalism. Yes, I used a big SAT word there. And if I'm getting a little too liberal college freshman for you, you can just fast forward about a minute or so ahead and I'll be done ranting. Starting now. I think it's just rude of people to refer to another as the Beast and calling another the Beauty. Have you seen any men's fights that have been marketed this way? No. So why should a women's fight be referred to like that? It cheapens the fight, demeans the athletes, and is a terrible double standard. This fight was the first fight to be sanctioned with 5-minute rounds like the men have, and this was really a fight about gaining equality among the fans and among the sport. But calling this fight Beauty vs. the Beast simply sets it back and keeps it like a novelty act that most outsiders already think it is to begin with. I know Cyborg especially has had to brush off a lot of that negativity with her, of course, being the Beast, leading into this fight, and she did in fact speak out against it finally last week, right before the match, and I'm glad for one that she did. Not every site did call the fight as Beauty vs. the Beast, but too many did, and unless you're going to call Nogueira vs. Couture Beauty vs. the Beast also, I highly suggest you knock it off. Alright, other fights this weekend. Babalu defended his Strikeforce light heavyweight title against Gerard Musasi, and it only took Musasi 1 minute to finish Renato Babalu Sobral. Musasi threw Sobral to the mat in the clinch, and then moved from side control, then to knee on chest, and just battered him with punches until his eyes rolled into the back of his head. Musasi actually got up before Big John even ended the match, so credit to him for doing that and recognizing his opponent was stone cold out of it. So I would say that is definitely a great way to debut in America, and maybe now Musasi will start getting more credit for what he's done. He's flown under the radar for way too long, and he's going to make a big impact in the next few years. Hopefully he's marketable, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he's definitely going to be one of the next big things in MMA for sure. Nick Diaz was supposed to defend his welterweight title against replacement Jay Haran coming in from Affliction, but Diaz decided he was too busy to smoke pot and not bother fighting this weekend, so, there you go. Instead, Jesse Taylor had to come in and was subsequently beaten by Haran. I like Taylor, and I expect more from him in the future, but Haran just has a killer instinct and quite simply went to town on JT. As for Nick Diaz, he hasn't really been too apologetic at this point. In fact, he's been complaining that the CSAC told him they weren't going to test him and all this. Meanwhile, it's called a surprise test. If you're too busy smoking and not taking fights seriously, why are you even a fighter in the first place? But I'll rant about Diaz, I think, on another day, because he deserves a long, long rant, the equivalent of what he usually does when he's on radio shows. And the last match I want to mention is Gilbert Melendez winning the interim lightweight title against Mitsuhiro Ishida, slowly chopping away at Ishida and ending it in the third round. Now, the fun of this match begins after the fight, as members of Mitsuhiro Ishida's camp have issued a verbal complaint to the California State Athletic Commission, claiming that Gilbert Melendez was illegally greased up during their fight at the event. Melendez defeated Ishida by a third-round TKO in a pretty one-sided match marked by Melendez's flawless counterpunching and takedown offense against Ishida. Now, when they first met back in 07, Ishida was able to control Melendez with those takedowns and his grappling ability, which might explain why Ishida thought something wasn't quite right at Strikeforce's show. Ishida has until the end of the week to file a formal complaint in writing if he wants to further pursue the charge, but really, is there any validity in this investigation, or is it just in vogue for a fighter who loses and claims his opponent is greasy these days? Okay, now, I don't know about you guys, but did you see the Strikeforce and M1 co-promotion ad that popped up during the end of the show? I did, and that looked pretty out of place. it's hard to believe that M1 actually got someone to co-promote with them. And I doubt that it will draw much attention to them, Fedor or not. Strikeforce's biggest draws right now are either Brazilian or Russian, and until Kung Lee gets back in the cage, or Frank Shamrock, or a few other guys here and there, for the most part, it's a lot of foreigners who they've been pushing on the main event, and it's very difficult to market foreign fighters to American audiences. Hopefully with the help of Showtime and a good marketing and budget, they can find a way to do it, since the fights are good, and competition, of course, means more fights for us fans. But pushing a foreigner into an American marketplace is a very difficult task here in America, especially with mixed martial arts. You're pushing a lot of different things at once, plus you're pushing women's fights as well. It can be a bit overwhelming for fans who are just jumping into the sport to kind of learn all these things, pick up all this information. So we'll see what happens, since this is Showtime and they've been doing combat sports for a little while now. They've got the budget to maybe make some miracles happen. But we'll see in time. Now, you want to know what the funniest part about this Strikeforce event is to me? The pay scale. Alright, listen to this, folks. Gina Carano made $125,000, while Cyborg made a paltry $25,000, which includes her $5,000 winning bonus. So if she lost, she only would have made $20,000, as opposed to Carano, who made the flat rate of $125,000, and possibly a bonus that we don't know about if she had won the match. So Carano made five times more than Cyborg did. And win or lose, that just messed up. Want to hear what's more messed up, though? Renato Sobral made $75,000 for his beatdown, while Musashi made the most laughably pathetic amount of $2,000. Let that settle in your mind for a moment, folks. $2,000. Rather, that's the $2,000 that's being disclosed. And I'm sure that M1 has probably dipped their hands into the Armenian assassin's pockets. But nonetheless, that is an enormous $73,000 difference between these two fighters. He made as much as the undercard fighters did, in fact, despite winning the Strikeforce light heavyweight title. This is an interesting allocation of funds, to be sure. The entire pay scale for the event was noticeably less than most UFC shows, but more than the last WEC show, and that's all well and good. But the difference in pay between these fights is just atrocious, I mean, especially considering the outcome of this event. Well, anyway, aside from that, what are your thoughts on the show, and what do you think Strikeforce has? Do you think they have what it takes to be a long-term contender after this week's event? Let me know your opinion and send an email to thefightnerd@gmail.com. That's all one word, and again, that's thefightnerd@gmail.com. Let me know your opinion about Strikeforce and the future of that company, as well as this weekend's show. And if you're one of the chosen few, I will read your letter on air. In other news this week, Chuck Liddell is out of retirement, but not for fighting. UFC Hall of Famer and former UFC light heavyweight champion Chuck the Iceman Liddell will be joining a cast of 15 other celebrities for the next season of Dancing with the Stars on ABC. Weird? Yeah, it gets weirder. The show is going to begin to air on Monday, September 21st, and Liddell has told UFC.com that he wants to win. It's not quite the UFC light heavyweight title, but a win is still a win. Liddell will be battling for dance floor supremacy against Michael Irvin, Donny Osmond, Melissa Joan Hart, Maya, Aaron Carter, Kathy Ireland, Kelly Osbourne, and eight other celebrities. Chuck has no prior dance training, and it should be interesting to see how he does on this show. I might even have to watch to see how it goes, although really, I would really just be watching to see Kathy Ireland. I mean, come on, can anybody here say MILF? Yum. Alright, so Chuck has become a household name, but his popularity has been waning in the past few years. Will this show help reinvigorate his career, just like Tito Ortiz's career was revived when he was on the Celebrity Apprentice? And will this bring any new fans to the sport of mixed martial arts? I doubt the last part, actually. I really don't think it will bring any new fans to the sport, but it should stir some interest and hopefully start to educate new fans who might be just casually watching, or at least educate fans of the show, Dancing with the Stars, to see what MMA is really about. There's still so much negative press about it. This is a good way to get it into the mainstream in a positive way. It's not like having a fighter on mainstream TV is going to automatically be good for the sport. I mean, you could take a look at shows like Bully Beatdown or even BET's experiment called Iron Ring, which failed horribly. I think both those shows probably do and did more harm, respectively, than they did educate. But we will see if Chuck can be the goodwill ambassador of MMA on ABC, and we will follow what happens in the show as it goes down. Other big news this week is the UFC has signed Phil Baroni, the New York Badass, to a contract this week almost immediately after Strikeforce cut his contract. Baroni is now added among Mark Coleman, Tito Ortiz, and several other fighters who Zuffa seems to be scooping up in their new game of keep away from Strikeforce. Pat Miletich has also allegedly buried the hatchet with Dana White and might be back in the octagon again soon. So, exciting stuff for sure to see these guys back in the big show, but what can they actually do now? None of these fighters are going to be title contenders, and other than Ortiz, can they really sell tickets? Is this more just a ploy to make sure that Zuffa has these fighters and that Strikeforce does not, and ultimately force these fighters into retirement inside the UFC cage? That's personally my theory. It is cool, of course, to see these legends set foot on the mats again, but I'm just curious about what they're actually going to do once they get inside the cage. Maybe Yama had the right idea all along, in fact, with their Masters division. And there's no reason Zuffa actually couldn't bring back Oleg or Mark Kerr, or even Don Fry. But that's just wishful thinking from me. So with that, we're going to take a break from the show, and when we return, we're going to talk with James Ergot and discuss his new TV show, MMA Worldwide. We're going to have a lot of fun stories about that, so stick around, we'll be right back. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world, such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7 or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Premiering on August 7th on HDNet, MMA Worldwide brings you unprecedented behind-the-scenes access to the mixed martial arts world. And joining us today is the director and one of the writers of the show. That would be James Ergot. James, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
All right, so the show just premiered, as I mentioned, August 7th. Have you heard any feedback about the show just yet?
No, you know, I really haven't. I saw online some people talking about it, and they were mixed across the spectrum, everything from people saying they loved it to people saying it sucks. So as long as you don't have everybody saying it sucks, you're pretty much in good position, because if you have a wide range of the spectrum, that means that pretty much, you know, you're not going to appeal to everybody, so that means that you've got a certain amount of people to like it. That's all you can really hope for with something like this. So.
Now, on the first episode, you had Forrest Griffin, Bruce Buffer, Wanderlei Silva. Have you heard any feedback from those guys at all?
No, I haven't. I know that Bruce Buffer is very excited about the third episode because he's going to be on that to a bigger extent. In fact, we go into his home. He shows us his gun collection. We work out with him, a whole bunch of stuff. So I know he's very excited about that episode coming up.
Oh, Bruce Buffer working out. What's one of his workout routines like?
Well, he does a lot of core stuff, and one of the things that's really going to be interesting is he actually trains to do the 180.
He actually trains that.
Doing a pull with, you know, a weight stack, you know, using the rope, and he actually mimics the movement of the 180 in order to work his core. So it's not just something he just goes and does. He actually trains to do the 180. So that's pretty funny.
So I guess for the Buffer 360, he had to do some special training, call up a special camp to help him out with that one?
Yeah, it's actually, I think he talks about that in the episode, because we filmed that episode prior to the UFC 100, so it's very interesting how the whole 180 came about and how, you know, it's kind of grown into what it is, so.
All right, now on this first episode of the show, you had Forrest Griffin and Bruce playing the UFC Undisputed game. How did that go for those who didn't see it at home? Can you tell us what that was like?
Yeah, pretty much, Forrest kicked Bobby's butt, and in retrospect, probably one of the techniques he used is he just kept pressing the same button over and over again and throwing the same kick, so. Hey, if it works, then it works, right? And I think Bruce Buffer, he's very competitive with anything that he does. He's a top poker player, too. So, and by the way, we play poker with him in the third episode, too. So.
All right, something to look forward to. Did you have a chance to play the UFC game with either of those guys?
No, you know, you didn't. I didn't actually get a chance to, because I was working behind the scenes making sure that everything is happening. So I didn't get a chance to play the game, unfortunately.
All right, well, there's always another time, and hopefully you can play Forrest in Street Fighter and see how many times he throws a Hadouken at you. That'll be interesting to see. All right, now, can you tell us what have you done before you got into this MMA Worldwide show? A lot of people might not know about your history in directing and film.
In 2004, I did a movie called All That I Need, which I did on a very small budget, and I got it into theaters. That was kind of my first sort of thing that I did all on my own, and meaning not that there wasn't other people to help, but meaning that I wasn't just working for somebody, but it was, you know, first project that I wrote, directed, produced, I even starred in that. And I got that into theaters, and then from that, I got hired by Beverly Hills Entertainment Company. I oversaw their different feature films, and I wrote a script called Never Submit while I worked there, which was an MMA related project. In fact, it was kind of like a Rocky story with MMA. I auditioned a bunch of fighters, attached people, and then, you know, there were some differences between me and the company that was doing that. That resulted in a lawsuit, and that lawsuit was settled. And from there, I moved on to other projects, including I filmed a movie called MMA Legacy, which involved a bunch of MMA fighters in a documentary style. And while I was in the middle of editing that, I got the opportunity to do this show. And, you know, I love HBNet. You know, I enjoy working with the Pittmans, and I enjoy, you know, MMA. So it was something that I really wanted to do. And you know, I ended up filming 10 episodes for it, so it ended up being something at first that I thought that I was only going to be involved to a small degree, and I ended up being, you know, involved in it for months, so that was a lot of fun.
What initially attracted you to the sport of mixed martial arts?
When I was in high school, I did judo, and I really enjoyed watching the first UFC. They used to, you know, go to Blockbuster as soon as the new ones would come out every couple of months, and, you know, I used to go with my friends, and we'd wrestle around in the garage, in the backyard, and stuff like that, and I got the Gracie tapes, the beginner and intermediate, and, you know, I grew up in Canada, so I didn't really have anybody to train with in the sense of, like, actually Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because where I lived, there was no Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu back then. That was, you know, in the first days of the UFC. So me and my friends, we just try to mimic the moves and learn from instructional tapes. So I really just enjoyed the challenge of it, and it was the only kind of sport that I really enjoyed. So I always followed it, and then I went off and did entertainment stuff. And then I thought, well, you know, I want to do something I enjoy, which is MMA, and I already have learned how to do, you know, a lot of things entertainment-wise. Why not merge those two loves and do exactly what I'm passionate about? So then my work didn't really become like work. It became like something I really enjoy.
That's good to have. Now, you may talk about it a little bit before. Can you tell us how the idea for the show originated?
Yeah, I know that the Pittmans, actually, they've got two magazines. They've got Tap Out Magazine, they've got MMA Worldwide, and they had been doing a show. They just put on a local LA channel, and it was the first season of MMA Worldwide, but that season was pretty much, like, very raw, and that they just kind of went out and interacted with people involved in MMA. Bobby got sick at the time, so they weren't really able to do what they wanted to do with it. I had actually met with them back when I was doing the Never Submit, you know, script and movie, so I had known them for a long time, and I talked to them about what kind of changes we could do, because they got the opportunity to take the show and put it on HDNet. So, you know, we wanted to have a more clear idea of what the show would be and the direction of everything, and came in and started organizing that with them, and I worked with Bobby to write the episode out and just kind of plan out what it would be. And one of the main things we wanted to do is to pretty much take the fan and put them in the position of being part of that world, you know, making it more accessible for them, because here's the magazine, these guys get to travel around and they get to go, you know, to the major fights, they get to go to the fighter's homes, they get to go to these training places and meet all the top people. And, you know, some kid out in a totally different part of the country would love to experience that, but may not get the opportunity, so they can live you know, Bobby and his crew and seeing what they go through and what it's like putting together the magazine and, you know, kind of bring that into their world. So that was kind of the original concept. And, you know, we just spun it off from there. And, you know, I'm really proud of each of the episodes has its own distinct flavor and you know, it's not really that repetitive. Every different episode, we do completely different things, so it's pretty exciting that way.
All right, now you mentioned Bobby. He's one of the hosts in the show, right? Who else is the host of this TV show?
Well, Bobby Pittman's the main host, and then they've also got Joker, which unfortunately I'm sure you heard there were some problems with him yesterday and the day before in terms of he, you know, the suicide attempt was, you know, came out in the news, so we're obviously very sad about that. And, you know, Fred George, who he is one of the owners of CSW with Eric Paulson, and RJ, who's the editor for Tap Out. And, you know, they've all got really distinct personalities, so they're basically the group that we're following around different locations and their adventures.
All right, now tell us about some of those locations, because you guys went all over the U.S. to film this show.
Yes, we filmed in San Jose for a Strike Force event. Man, we all kinds of crazy things. We a lot of the stuff filmed in Southern California, because of course that's close. We did stuff in Vegas. The first and second episode are behind the scenes in Vegas of the UFC. And part two of that will be coming out, I think, on the 22nd. There's no MMA Worldwide this week because of the Strike Force. So we got that preempted because of that. But starting the week after, they're going to play each it's going to be an hour-long block. They'll play the episode from the week before and then the new episode at 7:30 Eastern time. So the old episode starts at 7. We went to Bellator, we went to, I can't even remember all the places we went, but lots of different places, lots of cool stuff, and, you know, a lot of the fighters' homes. Went to interview the Gracies for an episode. You know, there's all kinds of cool things going on.
All right, well, with all those people you're meeting, did you happen to ever get starstruck with any of these fighters you met that maybe you've been a big fan of?
That's a good question. You know, most of them I had actually met before. So I I don't think so, because maybe when I first met them, but pretty much every single person we worked with I had met before. So, you know, Bruce Buffer is great to work with. So I'm starstruck in the sense that, you know, I love working with him. It's funny because I've met him a few times before, and I talked to him on the phone several times. And he knows who I am. And we were at his boat, and halfway into, you know, the filming, somebody mentioned my name, James Hergott. And this was like after we had been there for 4 or 5 hours. Bruce Buffer says, James Hergott's here? Like, we were in the sales for 4 or 5 hours. So it's a few of us, right? And then I'm like, yeah, I'm James Hergott. He's like, you're James Hergott? I'm like, yeah. And then, and actually, I introduced myself when I first met him as James Hergott, and he knows me. He's been on the phone, but I don't think he heard when I introduced myself, so that was kind of a funny thing that happened. But no, most of these guys, I've been to their gyms before. I've met them a few times before. Don is another guy that I love. Get starstruck in the sense that I just think he's a great guy, but I have met him a few times before.
Now, since you have all this unprecedented behind-the-scenes footage of these guys, who is the fighter that surprised you the most when you got the camera rolling on them?
Jimmy Browning. Browning, is that how you say his name?
Yep.
Jimmy, he surprised me because he didn't get crazy, or he wasn't really a jerk. He was actually very humble and very nice.
That's weird, since we saw him on Tough being that really crazy fighter as well.
Yeah, and when you talk to him behind the scenes, he's mentioned how he did that, a lot of that to, you know, I guess get attention on camera and to create drama, and, you know, in a way that it works, because, you know, tell me, you know, five other people from that season. You know, if you mention Junie, you know him from that season, but you might remember, you know, one other person from that season. So, you know, you can criticize him for his actions and how it makes the sport look bad. But on the other hand, in terms of how he's able to use that to launch his career, it probably was an effective strategy. So when you meet him, it was very shocking how humble he was and how much of a nice guy. And I liked Frank Figg as well. He was a good guy, although he got pretty angry with us. But I liked him as well.
What happened with Frank? Are you allowed to talk about us on the podcast?
What's that?
What happened with Frank? Are you allowed to tell us about what happened?
You'll see, pretty much Bobby fell asleep. I'm not going to say there's any drinking involved, but we were in Vegas, and he slept in till late in the afternoon. We had an interview planned, and we were late. And Frank Trigg wasn't too happy about us, and he actually called Bobby's dad, which is Bobby Pittman Sr., and suggested that he fire all of us. So,
wow.
That was interesting.
Awesome.
The next episode that airs, you can see kind of how that concludes.
Wow. All right. That definitely sounds a little dramatic.
And Tom Atencio was, he surprised me as well. Bobby got in the cage with him, and this was prior to his last fight. Prior to Tom's last fight, and Tom was training hard for that, and he's very skilled, much more than you would think. I mean, he's a very skilled fighter, and a lot of people, I think people kind of saw that in the last fight, but prior to that, people probably thought, he's just, you know, a t-shirt guy and this and that, but if you saw him training, you understand he's actually a competitive fighter. I mean, and he kicked Bobby's butt. Like, big time, so.
So, and you guys got to hang out with both Affliction and Silver Star Clothing. Can you talk a little about those experiences meeting with both of those companies and people within those companies? You know, they're very similar in their designs, a lot of their marketing. I mean, what was it like to be on the inside of both of those places?
Well, Affliction is more established in that it's a bigger facility. They obviously have been in the game a little bit longer. They gave us free t-shirts, which was cool. So
that's good.
Silver Star, I liked as well. Silver Star, it seems to me, as if they're newer in the game, but, you know, they have just really started to take off. They're sponsoring a lot of big-name fighters. They've got, you know, pretty much, until this thing was resolved with Affliction in the UFC, Affliction wasn't allowed in the UFC, so Silver Star had a competitive advantage, and, you know, their George St. Pierre shirt was selling like hotcakes. They were, a new emerging brand. So I would say that the big difference is that the Affliction guys are a little bit more, you know, settled. They kind of are comfortable where they're at, and whereas the Silver Star was, you know, the hungry, up-and-coming, new brand. And I've first been talked about how there's all these other companies that are coming up, and it's a very competitive industry. And everybody's trying to cut each other's throats. It's brutal, actually. And people will do knockoffs and all of this. So Affliction has a full gym in their facility now. They've got the actual cage they've got a cage, and they've got the actual ring from their shows in there. Plus, they've got a weight room, and they have these Conan the Barbarian style doors to go into the workout facility.
You got a flair for the dramatic.
The operation there. Whereas Silverstar just moved into a new place and is just starting to put things together. But Silverstar was a little bit more relaxed. I think that they haven't been through the same battles that has been through, because they're, you know, a newcomer to the game. So, but stumbling down there, and I like Tom the French. He seemed like a really good guy too. So,
did you have a chance to talk to any smaller companies during the filming of this show, also?
You mean like smaller clothing companies? I've always talked to different clothing companies because when you're doing entertainment stuff in MMA, a lot of them approach you. A lot of them seem to be kind of delusional, I guess, for lack of a better word, about what's going to happen to them. I mean, so many of them think that they're going to be thumb tap others, that they're going to become affliction, and that all they have to do is have a tough sounding name. And I'm amazed by how many of them are delusional that way, where they just absolutely don't have any money, don't have any distribution, don't have anything, and they think that they're going to be a billion-dollar brand. So, and it's unfortunate. It's sad, really. I mean, I love the dream. I love the ability of people to, you know, take that risk and to reach for the stars, you know, and I just think that anything you do, you have to go through a long, hard period before you make it. You know, and I think that somebody like Tap Out, they spent years and years struggling before they really made it. And, you know, no matter what you do, like whether it's being an artist, like you are, Matthew, or it's being, you know, doing what I'm doing with entertainment, or it's becoming a lawyer, you're going to have to spend years getting an education or making contacts, doing this and that. And, you know, the question is, can you survive all the struggles and come out 10 years from now and still be standing? And I would say that 90% of them won't.
Yeah. So,
and that probably goes for other things as well. I see that in the entertainment industry all the time. I have people like, when I get casting for movies, they want to become actors or actresses, and they think that, you know, they moved out here and they think that they're going to be big stars within a year, and it doesn't happen that way, and most of them give up. And if they just stuck it through, they probably wouldn't.
Yeah, just, you know, since this is the fastest growing sport in America now, everybody is trying to jump onto this bandwagon, get a piece of the action, if you will. And not many people are going to survive, though, definitely. I'm seeing that, too. You know, I don't want to say anything bad to any potential new sponsors out there, but there's so many companies out there, it's hard to really tell who's going to make it and who won't. And, you know, all you can really do is just sit back and watch the fun.
Yeah, like I said, it's not that none of them will make it. It's just that so many of them think they will, and it's not that easy. And you'll have people, like, for example, I know that Bob Pittman Sr., he talks to lots of sponsors for the show, and, like, there's one clothing company in particular that said, well, we don't really need to do any marketing. And I guess they, in their mind, they just had an astounding name, and it was just going to take off. And they're like, we don't need them to do any marketing. And they sponsored, like, one fighter for one show, and they think that they're going to become huge. It's just not that easy. I wish it was that easy, you know, but it's not that easy. So,
yeah, I wish it was.
But there are people that won't make it. There are companies that are making it in this industry, and you know, it's just the guys that have something unique and are able to have the result to last, you know, years and years of struggle. You know, Silver Star's been around forever. You know, people might think, oh, it's just a new brand, right? And there's all of a sudden sponsors, but they were a casting company before that, where they had their jewelry, and they were, you know, sponsoring chemo years ago. You know, so they're not somebody that just started last year either.
Interesting. I didn't know that about Silver Star. Back onto the show, though. I want to get back on. I'm getting a little bit off topic now. Back onto the show. What was the craziest moment you guys caught on camera during the filming of the show?
Oh, man. You know, one of the moments that I really remember, well, there's two of them that really stand out. We filmed behind the scenes of a show called Called Arms, which is it was a first-time promotion, and we got full access. Like, we were right behind, you know, backstage, and one guy got his eye, like, above his eye split open, and we were, like, right in the room when he was getting split up, you know, two feet away from him filming it. That was pretty intense, you know, just having that kind of access and following them before they went outside, and, you know, the whole beginning to end, all the preparation they do, that stands out in my mind. And another event, which was a Bellator event, we were following Soto, and we actually walked out with him. He walked out to Eminem's, that song that he did for 8 Mile, which is the name of the one he won the Academy Award for, and it's, you know, it's all about, you know, seize the moment or whatever, and we followed Soto for that, and we went backstage with him. He won the belt, and I think he got something like $200,000, it was a large purse, and this is the end of fighting, you know, for a tournament. So here's a guy that kind of came out of nowhere and won the belt, and we were right there for every moment of it. That was pretty inspirational to see that. A hard-working kid, his mother was backstage pulling for him, family-oriented kid, really nice guy. And just being able to feel the energy of him walking out, and being right there was pretty exciting.
I was going to ask about that Call to Arms show, in fact. I was reading about the upcoming episodes, and that one sounds very interesting to me. Can you tell us a little bit more about that episode that's going to be featuring the MMA show Call to Arms?
They had one show, and then they're going to be having an upcoming show. We're obviously not involved in the next show just because we've pretty much wrapped the filming of this season. But for the first season, they had Daniel Puter, they had Vladimir, they had a few different, Jason Lambert, they had a few different fighters, Tiki. It was a pretty stacked card, actually, for being a non-UFC or, you know, non-affliction, non-strike force event. And the cool thing for us was is the amount of access that we had, and that actually everybody as part of the crew, like RJ, doing their commentary, you know, doing the Joe Rogan for them, and we had Joker was in the corner of Jason Lambert, and we had Fred George was in Daniel Peter's corner, and we had followed Vladimir Matashenko, we had gone to his place and saw him take an ice bath and training for the fight. So we were really involved in the situation, and that our guys were either cornering people or, you know, commentating on it. So it was just interesting to see all different aspects of the fight game, you know, from the commentating to the fighting to the training that goes into it. And it's a pretty interesting episode. We're really proud of that. I think and we even, you know, get to see how, the show is put together from behind the scenes as well. And that particular episode, I don't think, it's not, we ended up cutting it out, but I actually got choked out in that episode as well.
Who choked you out? Who's the person that choked you out?
Was that the first time? I've been choked out in judo before, but that was the first time that I said, hey, I'm going to be choked out. Actually, what happened was that there's a girl that wanted to do a choke. Like, and she's Daniel Peters, like, does his website or whatever, the little blonde thing, and she probably weighed about 100 pounds. She wanted to choke somebody out. I volunteered. And she didn't have the strength to choke me out because she's this, you know, small little thing. So Bobby's like, well, I'll choke you out. I got choked out and I started drooling all over the place. But the funniest part was that I still to this day say that I never was bully out. And they dispute that, but they said I was out. But
I have no idea.
How can you be drooling on yourself if you weren't out? But maybe I don't remember being out.
At least you didn't pee your pants. That's what matters too.
Yeah, I didn't pee my pants, but you know what? One of the funny things is we had a new intern on that day, and it was his first day on the job. And he's like, "This might." And I think he trains fighting and all that. And Connor, and he goes, "My first day at this job," and he goes, and somebody gets choked out. He's like, "This job's fucking great," you know.
Yeah, I wish I could do that at my job too. Finally, one of these days.
Yeah.
Right, now, I also want to talk about the episode. You mentioned you went, you did an episode about the Gracies, and you also did an episode about Tribute to Mask from Tap Out. And the Gracie episode, you kind of had Jean-Jacques Machado do a tribute to Helio Gracie as well. Let's just talk for a moment about these tributes that you guys did on these shows.
Yes. Well, we went around to a lot of Gracies. Unfortunately, some of the people didn't make the cut just because of the time allowance. But, you know, we talked to several of the Gracie brothers. And, you know, we went to the Gracie Academy. We toured the facility. They have a museum there, obviously, where they have all these type of things. Like, they've got Helio's, you know, all different history of Helio, and they've got the, like, the gi that the brothers trained with when they were kids, and they've got the first prototypes of the UFC cage. So we went pretty in-depth into that and all the different memorabilia and experiences with that, and got a chance to really talk firsthand to Rose Gracie, which is the, you know, granddaughter, and, you know, we talked to several of the Gracies and just got their personal experience of dealing with Helio and the impact that he had on their life. So that was very humbling because obviously, you know, I watched the first UFCs, and I guess I was a little bit starstruck, you know, meeting the Gracie brothers just in the sense of the amount of history that is there. And, you know, a lot of times they get kind of disrespected sports-wise because people say, oh, they can't win anymore, and it's, you know, outdated and all that. But their impact on the sport, you know, is there. And when you see the history of long before any of this stuff happened with the UFC and everything and how it all came about, it's very cool. In fact, it's kind of the American dream if you think about it. You know, coming here and starting to train people in their garage and, you know, the beginnings of the UFC. It's a very cool story, and, you know, I think Helio definitely deserves more credit than he gets. You know, everybody's talking about Mask and Mask getting into the Hall of Fame with the UFC and all that stuff, but, you know, Helio should be in the Hall of Fame as well. I don't think he is. You know, obviously they did that sort of tribute thing at the first UFC, or was it the second UFC? They
first UFC.
Helio, but, you know,
like a lifetime achievement award or something.
Doesn't really talk about the history of the Gracies, and their impact is unmistakable. And as far as that, we actually had started filming the show when Mask unfortunately died. So, we did some, you know, in a respectful way, we did some filming at the funeral of the impact that this had on Joker and things like that. And director Bobby Razek, you know, worked with us on a lot of the episodes for the show, and he provided some of his footage, you know, including he had the last commercial that Mask did and an interview with Mask about that and him jumping off the building and all of that. So we've got a unique interview nobody's really seen before as part of the episode as well. So I thought that was, you know, really important to show those, you know, show those tributes just because of timing, because both of those deaths really happened while we were doing the show. So.
All right, now, if you could say that there was one moment that really captures what MMA Worldwide is all about, what would that moment be?
Me getting choked out. No, I would say that there's an episode where we do with the Russo brothers. Now, I'm sure you know who the Russo brothers are, but a lot of people don't know who they are. They're these two kids that train, and they're like 6-7 years old, and they've got a younger brother who's 4, I believe, whose name is Hoyce, and they train all MMA. They train judo, they train wrestling, they train stand-up, they train jiu-jitsu, the whole thing. And these guys do, you know, go-go platos. They're very, very experienced, and they train with Randy Couture, and we had them come out to DFW, and we showed them training. And in fact, we had a match between Bobby and one of the brothers, and the brother kneed him, like, really good, like, messed him up a little bit. So I would say that sums it up, because that's the next generation. These are kids who are, you know, 6-7 years old, and they already can do all the transitions, know all the moves. The Mask person when they're 20, 24 years old. How incredible those kids will be.
Yeah, those kids are definitely
so
crazy.
I would think that's the future. And we kind of have all aspects. We have the history with Helio Gracie all the way up to here's next generation coming up.
That's right. And for those of viewers who are not familiar with these kids, you can check out my interview with Robert Drysdale or the recent music video we have of the Extreme Couture Gym, and you actually see both of these kids doing not only their striking practice, but their jiu-jitsu, and they're going to be crazy, crazy fighters when they get older. All right, now, James, you also mentioned you just wrapped up on a project called MMA Legacy. Can you tell us a little bit more about that project?
Well, that one's got George Angel, it's got Dean Thomas, Joaquin Spirit Wolf. It's got Elena Maxwell, who's fought in Strike Force. Jose, that fought in Strike Force. Complete mix of different MMA personalities. And filmed them last summer. And training and living together and all these different things. And it's funny because I was in the middle of editing that, and I started working on the show, and I got sidetracked. So now I get to focus on that project among, amongst other projects. So it's pretty exciting that I started out and I wanted to do MMA, and now it's like I have so much MMA that I can't even finish all the MMA projects that I have going on. So that's a good problem to have, though. So
it's a good time to be in sport.
Project, I'll be looking to finish that and get that out there as well. But right now it's all been shot. I just have to finish the editing aspects for it.
All right, I know it might be a little bit too early to tell us, but is there going to be a Season 2 for MMA Worldwide?
Well, technically this is Season 2, but it's the first season on HDNet. I don't know. That's a commitment. If they want to go through all the stuff we've gone through, because we started in January on it, and it's just been a long, very grueling journey, actually. But, I'm expecting that they probably will want to do another season, but we have 10 episodes coming out of that. So that's going to, since we're preempted this week, that carries us into, October or November. So, there's lots of episodes coming out that people can enjoy, and then we'll, take a little bit of a break, which finally, today is one of the last days that I really have to work on it, and then things are going to just kind of settle down, so I'll take a little bit of a break, and then see what happens for the next season. So, but, all of these episodes, there's lots of great stuff. We do a segment with Kung Lee, the guy behind the scenes of Strike Force. Like you mentioned, we've got the Mask Tap Out, the Mask and Tap Out tribute, we've got the Rufo brothers, we got a Big John, Tom Matencio, pretty much anything, Dan Henderson, pretty much anything that people love about MMA, we got a chance to go out and see, and I think there'll be some new things that people haven't really seen either, so I'm really excited about both of these projects, actually.
Yeah, they sound very, very awesome, and I can't wait to actually start seeing them on TV, and as you mentioned, they are on HDNet. Can you tell us when we can catch these shows on HDNet?
They're going to be 7:30 Eastern Time on HDNet, and every week starting, not this week, but the weekend after, they'll start at 7 o'clock Eastern Time playing the episode from the week before, so it'll be an hour-long block.
And that's going to start on the 22nd?
I believe the 22nd, I don't have the calendar in front of me, but yes, I believe the 22nd is the next episode. Just so that your fans know some of the upcoming episodes that they may really want to pay attention to. I think that episode 3, which has Bruce Buffer, is a really good episode because we got to go to his house. He shows his memorabilia for Let's Get Ready to Rumble. Talks about his relationship with his brother, how that came about. That's a very good episode. That's episode 3. Episode 4 is the Gracie episode. Episode 5 is, according to what I've been told by HDNet, is their favorite episode that we've done. which is, you know, we got Big John McCarthy, and he actually showing reffing and how that goes, and we take Fred George, and he shows a little bit how to do the reffing, and then he goes into the cage and actually refs the match, and Big John goes over what he did right and what he did wrong, and then the roof, oh, there's a part of that episode as well. Episode 6 is the Call to Arms, the behind the scenes of that. Episode 7 is Northern California and going to Kung Lee's. We've got episode 8, which is the Simply Believe, which is, you know, a lot of the Razzic stuff, a lot of the behind the scenes interview with Matt. Then we got where we go to Silver Star Clothing and we do Bellator. That's episode 9, and then episode 10. We do Dan Henderson, and we've got some other special prizes with that one as well. So, but episode 3, definitely check that one out, and with Bruce Buffer, and the episode with the Rufo Brothers is very cool too. So,
all right, I'll definitely be looking forward to checking those out. And you can always, of course, check out MMA Worldwide magazine on newsstands everywhere. James, thanks for coming on to the show today. Appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox or a Yanks fan, you can't deny good designs. Check out bostonbrawler.com. And also by findmmagym.com. Looking for an MMA gym near you? Head to the best site to find your new place to train at findmmagym.com. And we are back on Fight Nerd Radio, and you just listened to James Ergot talk about his new MMA Worldwide TV show on HDNet. You can check out their website for more information on the show and when you can watch it, or you can just rewind the podcast a few minutes and listen to James tell you again. The Fight Nerd is also going to be on TV very soon, but I think I'm going to make that announcement next week. I'll let you guys know what's going down then, since by then I'm hoping to have my computer back and I can actually make a nice podcast again. A lot smoother transitions and less choppiness between the show. It bugs me, I'm sure it bugs you guys. Anyway, that's going to be it for this episode of Fight Nerd Radio. I want to thank my sponsors once more, and they are CageSideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. So keep them checks coming, boys. Once again, until my computer is totally fixed up, things are going to be a little slow on the site. But you can look forward to more interviews from the New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo. And once I get my Mac back, you're going to see a flood of new materials make up for this absence, because I've got a lot of good stuff just waiting to put out there. Also, don't forget to send me an email at thefightnerd@gmail.com to ask me any questions about mixed martial arts or my opinion on any events coming up or past, or to answer my question to you this week, which is, what are your thoughts on the Chrono vs. Cyborg show, and do you think Strikeforce has what it takes to be a long-term contender in the MMA world after this weekend's show? So with that, I'm going to sign off for this episode. I am the Fight Nerd, and thank you for listening.